Whether it's the return of his campaign fundraisers or appearing at press events with state lawmakers who previously called for him to resign, it appears to be business as usual again for Governor Andrew Cuomo, who was against the political ropes 4 months ago as multiple women came forward with allegations of sexual misconduct against him. To discuss the current reality in Planet Albany, we're joined once again by Alexis Grinnell, a political consultant who's been writing about gender and politics for nearly a decade and is now a columnist for The Nation magazine. Welcome back to the show, Alexis.
Thanks, Dave.
So for starters, what do you think of the premise that the governor and even state lawmakers have reverted back to business as usual, the everyone coming forward with allegations of misconduct against the governor reality that we had?
Well, there's frankly historically nothing unusual about the assembly covering up gender-based violence and sex crimes against staff on behalf of powerful men. So that's a pretty unfortunate reversion to the mean. And it's particularly disturbing to see it actually from lawmakers who sit on the Judiciary Committee of the assembly, which is supposedly running an independent investigation into the governor, who is at this point, I believe, under four different investigations for various forms of misconduct, not just sexual. And that really represents a neglect of duty, possibly a massive conflict of interest. And I would say that seeing Albany revert to the kind of cesspool of corruption it's been historically known for under Shelley Silver, who, of course, is serving a prison sentence for public corruption, is a sad and not surprising development, because the fight for gender equality and a better, more feminist leadership structure is ongoing. And I think we know that.
So you made the point that the governor is under multiple investigations, but to be clear, those are just investigations and he hasn't been found guilty of anything. He hasn't actually been facing any criminal charges at this point. Is that the threshold we should be using? Because that appears to be the one he's using when making his decisions about remaining in office and even potentially running again.
So it's a real, I think, question about integrity, right? We set a certain standard for elected office that hopefully and presumably is above just bare criminality, right? You need to actually, and in fact, the governor himself loves to boast of this. This is about, for him, integrity and competence and all these things. So it's not just, have you been officially indicted on criminal charges that basically determine whether or not you're fit to lead? That's not the standard we should have in our politics, and it's not the standard, frankly, even this governor has set. But we know for the most part that the rules don't really apply to him. In fact, you talked about a reverse, things going back to normal. Well, one of the things that's back to normal, and that's a real problem that should not be normal, but it was normalized in the Trump administration, is he's having press conferences without press. The governor made an announcement 2 days ago, basically declaring gun violence the new COVID, which is pretty self-serving rebrand of a long existing endemic, pandemic, even that even public health experts have called gun violence that for a very long time. In a room full of politicians with no press. And there's no longer a COVID excuse to keep reporters out. It's just a way to manage image and to refrain from actually being held to account for anything. So the governor is actually subject to heavy scrutiny by reporters and chooses not to allow them in the room. This is a new kind of normal, again, a standard that our last president set, which was really problematic. And I want to point out that that is not something politicians should be supporting, applauding, standing next to him for. Keeping a free and fair fourth estate out of the room is a rejection and repudiation of democracy.
And just to follow up, though, only 23% of New Yorkers, according to a recent Siena College Research Institute poll, think the governor should resign immediately, and nearly three quarters are okay with him either serving out the rest of his term or even running again. So why shouldn't we be following the opinion of majority of New Yorkers?
We don't actually subject the law or human rights to a public opinion survey, right? So most people are not actually aware of the human rights law in New York State or the public officers law, or frankly, nor should they be. This is not stuff that they need to deal with in their daily lives. But it's actually not a matter of opinion whether or not a sitting governor should remain in office if he or she has violated the law. I think we have a problem, which is that most people generally don't understand what the law is and where the standard is. So it's the same thing where we, you know, when during the Anita Hill Clarence Thomas hearing, or I think something like 11 polls conducted over 8 days, and the vast majority of people sort of were like, well, I don't know how I feel. He should probably be confirmed. What is this? I you know, basically came down against Anita Hill. And then a year later, those results flipped. People had time to form opinions, develop, incorporate new information, and develop their ideas further. We don't have a lot of education around what the human rights law should be. And frankly, this governor is very deft at manipulating it. He's presented misinformation. He has said 6 different things out of both sides of his mouth over the course of this 7-month period. It's understandable why people would be confused. And obviously, and this is something I've written about, due process is a really important concept in our legal system. The thing is, Andrew Cuomo is overflowing with due process. In fact, he's got 4 different lawyers that the taxpayers are paying for, and he's going to have nothing if not due process. But the question of what is the standard for holding high office actually is not mutually exclusive from resignation. The governor could resign and we can have due process for him. So I know that sounds seemingly at odds, but it's really about a standard of what do we expect from leadership. And at this point, we've got nearly a dozen women who've accused the governor of sexual misconduct, including one who remains at work in the chamber. And the governor has actually not refuted the account of Charlotte Bennett, who first described him soliciting her for sex while she was a 25-year-old staffer working for him. This should be a problem. This should be a real concern. But I understand that, you know, this is a struggle to make people understand why women's humanity in the workplace should matter. But beyond that, there's the nursing home cover-ups. There's the special treatment for his family and relatives. There's violations of the public officers law, wherein he used public resources to write his book that he got a $5 million advance for. These are other problems that should matter. And I think the governor is benefiting from a complacency coming off of the pandemic where so many people feel exhausted, understandably, and feel helped by him because he was a reassuring voice during a time of great uncertainty. And that's why I think we have these sort of results in the polling. But it is up to the sort of political leadership to kind of make sure it's clear where the standard should be. And that's why it's inappropriate for members of the Assembly Judiciary Committee to be dining in the mansion with the governor. And it's inappropriate for politicians to be standing next to him while he holds press conferences without any press.
In case you're just joining us, we're talking with Alexis Grinnell. She's a political consultant who's been writing about gender and politics for nearly a decade and is now a columnist for The Nation magazine. Well, speaking about these state lawmakers, many of whom have called on the governor to resign and are now appearing with him in public events, essentially giving him their stamp of approval by doing so. Do you have any sort of understanding of where they're coming from? Because if the governor is going to go about as business as usual, do they need to do the same, you know, to get the best deals for their constituents, to bring home the bacon, to get laws signed, et cetera, et cetera?
You know, this past legislative session really proved that if the legislature just sort of stood on its own 2 feet, they could accomplish quite a lot without the governor mediating in the middle. And I think we have a problem where the Assembly, unlike the Senate, the Assembly is working side by side with the governor to slow walk an investigation and give cover to him. And I don't know exactly why that is, but power covering for itself is not new. And that is a real problem. And I think what we've seen from leaked tapes and some very good reporting is that there is concern within the People's House about sort of what an investigation into the governor or an impeachment of the governor could mean for them and their own prior conduct. And I think, obviously, if you're worried that the governor being impeached for sexually harassing his staff could redound badly for you personally, that's a bigger problem.
So our conversation has been about business as usual in Albany. And if we're focusing on the idea of business as usual in Albany, then through the lens of that idea, thinking about next year's primary, business as usual means Governor Cuomo is the Democratic nominee. And we recently spoke with New York State Republican Party Chair Nick Langworthy, and he's convinced that Cuomo is destined to be the Democratic nominee for governor next year. Is that a fair assessment for you?
I think the governor is certainly positioning himself that way, and he's got a very strong apparatus to support him, but I do not think it's a foregone conclusion at all.
And do you think that there's any type of candidate that could come through and challenge the governor seriously based on our current power structure in New York and within the Democratic Party?
I mean, the Attorney General, Letitia James, is in a prime position to do that. She is a Black woman from New York City who holds statewide office and could poach a prime constituency from him that he's been actively cultivating and frankly needs to succeed. She's a threat, which is why, of course, the governor's office has been devaluing her and attempting to politicize her investigation, which is, of course, just her doing her job. And it's the same job that the governor himself executed when he was the attorney general investigating David Paterson, before him, Elliot Spitzer. I mean, this is a double standard he's applied to one of his successors, and it's obviously because she poses a very potent political threat.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is a double standard, but do you think that it would be okay, either from an optics point or just that higher standard that we might want to hold politicians to have her potentially running against someone for the Democratic nomination next year, either after she's come out with what could be a very scathing report of his conduct?
I think it would not be appropriate for her to announce any intent to run prior to that report being released, but I think it would actually make her claim particularly valid if she were to do so afterwards, since she would have had a front row seat to the governor's misconduct. And I think that that makes her not only appropriate, but well qualified to critique him and to offer a different vision to New Yorkers of what, frankly, competent, non-corrupt, and to quote Damon Nessel, who is the attorney general of Michigan, when she ran, she said, you know, I'm running to be the attorney general of Michigan, and I'm never going to show up to work in a bathroom and sexually harass anyone. That's a standard that we should really have for politicians.
And probably for most bosses around the state.
For people in general, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we've been speaking with Alexis Grinnell. She's a political consultant who's been writing about gender and politics for nearly a decade, and you can find her work now as a columnist for The Nation magazine. Alexis, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Dave.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
Join us again for Capitol Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.